Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Is a legitimate player fight a good thing for a football team or just another unnecessary risk? And do you think Javon Wims was making a statement after seeing Emmanuel Hall cut earlier in the day?
Boy, I like the second question, I think, even more than the first question. And I like the first question. I got to be honest with you. I like a good training camp fight. I've always liked a good training camp fight. I think it means people are locked in and focused and they've had enough and they're ready to hit somebody. And I think that's a good thing. I don't want a training camp fight. I don't want guys to leave it in that fight. I don't want the best hit of the year to be in the training camp fight. I don't want the greatest moment of the player to be in the training camp fight. But I certainly have seen plenty of guys over the years that are eager to jump in and do their part in a drill and will go beyond it. And that really will peeve people off. And that is a good tension to have on a football team. Think about the sport. Think about what you need to play football. I don't know that Javon Wims was motivated by Emmanuel Hall, but I like that idea too. I like the idea that you're sending a message to everyone when you have a guy. You know, Emmanuel Hall is the kind of guy with the kind of speed that made him a priority guy to get in here and, you know, great career in the SEC. Immediately has kind of an injury and some ticky-tack stuff. The idea that they're not going to put him on the practice squad with that weapon, with that speed, which translates into the NFL, tells you that there was something going on there, and that does send a message to everyone.
After they paid him.
And they gave
him. I know it wasn't a lot of money.
It's not tons of money.
But it's a statement.
It's saying something.
Yes.
So I think that it's important. I mean, the NFL is a dog-eat-dog business, and it is all bottom-line stuff, and there's nothing wrong with reminding players of that fact, if indeed that's what happened here. I think it's a little stretch, but whatever it was, it's usually this is carryover from more than one practice, not one thing that happens. This is sort of a build-up, and I like it. I don't think it's bad as long as everybody walks away and everybody, you know, I thought it was funny that Matt Nagy pointed out both these guys are like as nice a guy as
they
you can
are.
Find. Nonetheless, you got to play the game, so Amukamara, I have no problem with it.
Amukamara is a prince of a guy. I mean, this is a guy who's a gentleman and a scholar.
He is.
Look, everything's relative. Okay. And I have to qualify this. If you're the Raiders, if you're the Cardinals, you really don't want training camp fights because it's a sign of dysfunction and is really you're going to be a bad team having a tough season, and do you really want that to be added to the mix? No, you don't, because you don't have proof that you're going to be any good. The Bears are the opposite. The Bears are a team that reported to Bourbonnais. What was priority number one, really, for Matt Nagy? To avoid complacency, to develop an edge, to get an identity. I like the fact that the first day back at Hallis Hall, they're still going at it. There's an intensity there that carried over that is, you know, they're tired of seeing each other. They're tired of playing against each other.
Right.
They want another opponent. And you do have two relatively mild-mannered guys going at it. And I don't know if the Emmanuel Hall news is related to Javon Wims' mood, but I like the idea of it as well because I think that it sent a message to a very crowded wide receiver room that, you know what, there might not be room for you, that you have to perform each and every day, and part of the biggest ability is availability. And Emmanuel Hall wasn't very available because he was injured for whatever reason, and he had this and he had that. So stay on the field, and when you're on the field, make those minutes matter, make every practice count. So that was an ode to that, and I like it. I like the fact that the Bears, here they are, you know, before their second preseason game, still making practices feel less like drudgery and more like a competition.
These camp fights inevitable in all 32 training camps across the league. The only good thing was that it ended up taking this long. So I don't view it as a good thing. But it was kind of surprising that they did have to leave Bourbonnais for it to finally happen. There was some shoving going on Sunday, right, with Hicks?
Hicks and Long.
And Mr. David, you were involved there too?
Yeah. Keem Hicks is involved. You know it's intense.
I thought it was...
Check me out, man.
It was noteworthy that Trubisky seemed more bothered by it than Matt Nagy. Because when he was talking to the media, he's like, hey, we got work to do, guys. Let's stop messing around with this. As far as sending a message, I don't know if that was the case. Don't know what the Wims-Hall relationship was. I don't think he thought, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to show them that I'm willing to fight to stay, that this is my spot and I'm not giving it up. But I'm sure that entire group of receivers was on edge after that move earlier in the day.
You know, I don't love this. It's one of the things about football that I find to be kind of, I don't know, I don't want to use the word barbaric, but, you know, it's an intense game and tempers will flare even when it's just your own teammates and you're just practicing. What I did like about it is after the fact and some of the quotes from Amukamara and Wims where they completely dismissed it. You know, it was just a tackling drill. We just tackled each other, is what Wim said. That's my brother. We're a brotherhood. It wasn't even an incident. I like the fact that after all this went down, they just acted like this was a good thing, and they were able to spin it in a way that kind of fits this narrative that we've all kind of bought into now with, you know, the culture and what Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace and these veterans have brought to the Bears culture. And they're even able to spin something like a fight, which honestly shouldn't really be happening between teammates, but
Kevin,
it does.
Kevin, don't you sometimes feel a little warm and fuzzy about Dustin after going at it with him? Don't you kind of want to give him a hug?
I've never wanted to hug Dustin in my entire life.
More than you do right now.
But I imagine, yeah, I do miss him. He's been gone for a few days now. And Mully, it looks like he's texting in to the station this morning.
That was a great
inquiring
thing.
About himself and his return.
That was David who did respond. The text was like, when is Dustin going to be back? And David said, thanks for texting, Dustin. We'll see you tomorrow.
Back to my main point about this is that the Bears are sitting in such a good spot right now is that even something so stupid like a training camp fight can be spun into a positive. And I think that actually is the best thing about this is that they just all went about their business. Nobody, no hard feelings, apparently. And now we're talking about it today like, wow, this is great that these guys are fighting each other because they all handled it so well. And it buys into this brotherhood and this culture that everyone else has already bought into as well.
Yeah, this is football, man. Brad Biggs, in his reporting, said it was the biggest fight of training camp. It wasn't the first fight of this training camp. So it's already, you know, it's chippy. This is what these guys do. They're chirping at each other. They're talking trash. This is typical of what you see probably at all training camps around the league. Absolutely. So due to all of the brotherhood and all of those aspects that Kevbo brought up, I will say that on this team, it's more of a good thing than an unnecessary risk because of the tight-knit culture that Matt Nagy has installed with this team. So I'm not concerned about it at all. These guys are going to be just fine. The Emmanuel Hall part of the question, I like anybody using anything for motivation, to motivate themselves. I do truly think that guys are just really worried about themselves and making sure that they want to, you know, that they're going to make the team. I'm sure Javon Wims is more concerned just about him and is laser focused on himself. But hey, if he did use that as motivation, I'm all about it. Use anything you can to motivate yourself to be a better player.
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Oh, I like that.
I like that question because there's not an obvious answer.
CBS Sports made 5 bold predictions involving the Bears. They'll repeat as NFC North champs. Khalil Mack will get 20 sacks. Roquan Smith will be an All-Pro. Mitch Trubisky will have more touchdown passes than Aaron Rodgers. And Allen Robinson will get...
You couldn't even get through that one.
And Allen Robinson will get 1,000 yards receiving. Which is the most likely to happen and which is the most far-fetched?
Well, 4 of those are pretty bold. I don't think it's bold to say they're going to repeat as NFC North champs. I expect that to happen. Let's go one by one real quick. Khalil Mack, 20 sacks is asking quite a bit, even for a guy that is that dominant. I think he could dominate, would still have 12 sacks like he did last year, and he'll be between 12 and 15, but 20 is a tall order. Roquan Smith being all pro, he's going to be one of the top 5 to 10 linebackers inside in the league, but I don't think he's necessarily all pro. His high sack totals could be something that sways people when they're looking and evaluating that and voting on that, because I think he will have more sacks this year with the blitzing increases, but I don't know if you need him to be all pro. I like that idea, though. The Mitch Trubisky having more touchdowns than Aaron Rodgers, it's actually, the way they worded it was kind of strange, because it said account for more touchdowns, which means running and throwing. Last year, they were even, so it's not as ridiculous as it actually sounds. They both had 27 touchdowns, Mitch 24 through the air and 3 with his legs, and Rodgers 27 touchdowns, 2 on the ground and 25 in the air. But I still think it's ridiculous to expect more out of Mitch Trubisky than Aaron Rodgers, so I do think that's kind of silly. The Allen Robinson 1,000 yards receiving, I like Allen Robinson a lot. I think he's a bona fide, legitimate number one wide receiver in the NFL. That said, the favorite target in this offense, as I've said before, is the open guy. And I just think the Bears have too many options almost to distribute the ball to, that he's not going to get the big numbers that he has in the past. I think David Montgomery probably has a better chance of getting 1,000 yards rushing than Allen Robinson does 1,000 yards receiving. So I don't know that those four are going to happen. I think the one that will, they're going to win the division.
Yeah, I think they're going to win the division. I think Khalil Mack could get 20 sacks. I think it's more likely he's Defensive Player of the Year. He doesn't need 20 sacks to do that. I think he's going to have a great year. Roquan is a great young player. Will he be an all-pro? That's asking a lot. I don't know. Maybe he needs a year before they name him that. But I think all those things are possible. And I think it's possible Allen Robinson gets 1,000 yards because he's such a big target, and if he can get the ball down the field. The one that really jumps out at me is Mitch and Aaron Rodgers. I can't decide whether this is saying that Aaron Rodgers can't do it anymore. Aaron Rodgers has started 154 games and has 338 touchdowns. So he's 35 years old. Mitch has started 26 games and has 31 touchdowns. Now, I know we have to throw out the first year because it wasn't in this offense, but I think that question is interesting because it's really as much about Rodgers as it is about
Mitch.
Yeah,
it is.
Do you think Rodgers is going to have a good year? Do you think Rodgers is going to adapt to his new offensive scheme? If he does, then he'll have a good year.
Do you also think it has something to do with Mitch's running ability? Because he could score more touchdowns running.
He had 3 last year.
I don't think I want Mitch scoring more.
Do they want him running?
Yeah.
I don't either, but I wonder if he will anyway.
Right. I mean, you know, I don't think they're going to use him in goal line situations with the QB sneak or anything. Yeah, I maybe that's what they're thinking, but I think that's a bad thought. I really don't think any of these are very far-fetched, but I think the one that jumps out at me would be the Aaron Rodgers thing. I think Rodgers is better than people think, and we're seeing quarterbacks, Tom Brady and Drew Brees in particular, play well at the age of 35, and I think Rodgers could have a good year. So I will go with that as the outlier.
Same thing.
Everything else I think is pretty good.
The most likely to happen will be Roquan Smith is an all-pro.
Wow.
He had 122 tackles last year after no camp and playing only 13% of the snaps in week one. The all-pros last year, Luke Kuechly, Bobby Wagner, Darius Leonard, they were 1-4-8 in tackles in the league.
A lot of good linebackers, though, Joe.
There are. And this has nothing to do with the fact that I got down on some Roquan Smith at 125
nothing
to
at all.
125 to 1 for Defensive Player of the Year.
Nice.
I know that's tough with Mac on that same defense, but I think he has a shot. He's going to take a huge leap this season. Most far-fetched out of this list, I hate to go against Khalil Mack in anything, but after last year's dominant season, we're talking about a 7.5 sack jump on top of that to get to 20.
It's a big number.
And the Bears could get 7.5 more sacks easily as a team because of if they're blitzing more.
Yeah,
but I don't know that Khalil gets it.
Especially with the attention he'll get.
Right.
It's only happened 12 times since they started recording this. Since 1982, someone's had 20 sacks. And with Roquan getting 20, I don't see Mac getting 20. So, no, that is the most far-fetched.
Yeah, I'll just burn through these in order here. I don't think it's a bold prediction to say that they'll repeat as NFC champions. I think everybody expects them to be you know, probably the best team in the division. They are the defending champions, 12 wins last year. So that's not exactly a bold prediction. Khalil Mack, 20 sacks, I think, is a little bit bold. As great as he is, his career high was 15, I believe, back in 2015. So to expect him to make that leap up, maybe a bridge too far. Roquan Smith could definitely see him being an all-pro, no question about that. It's not news to anybody what a great, promising young player he is. And then here is my least likely and most likely. I don't expect Mitch Trubisky to have more touchdown passes than Aaron Rodgers, you know, even though there's already seemingly a little bit of beef or disagreement between Rodgers and Matt LaFleur up in Cheddar Land. I think he's going to be able to hurl the football and open up the offense at his behest, and he's going to be able to chuck that pretty much as he wants. So he's going to be able to get into the end zone plenty this year through the air. But I definitely expect, you know, barring injury, I do expect Allen Robinson to get 1,000 yards receiving. David, I'm with you. I think he is a legitimate number one receiver in this league, and I think in this offense, which, you know, has a lot of weapons to offer, but I think somebody has to step up and be that guy that Mitch can kind of lean on a little bit, you know, in tough spots when things aren't going great. You need that one kind of ace receiver, and I think Allen Robinson is that guy. He can be that guy, and I think he does go over 1K this year.
The most likely to happen, I do agree, Roquan Smith becoming an all-pro. He had a sensational season last year. You just expect him to make a huge leap. I'll go through all these really quickly. Khalil Mack, Joe, you weren't here yesterday. My spicy hot take of the day yesterday that I'm handling with oven mitts because it's so hot.
That was sizzling. Khalil Mack sizzling, Ray.
Will have 21 sacks. He's going to make that gigantic leap. He's going to have a monster year.
Maybe Aaron Rodgers will lay down.
Maybe. So, yes, going through the rest of these quickly, Aaron Rodgers having Trubisky having more TD passes than Rodgers. No, that's not going to happen. Absolutely not. Sorry, Mitchell. And Allen Robinson, though, getting 1,000 yards receiving, I do think is a possibility.
I think the only person that should answer those questions is him.
Ben Zobrist will be back for another weekend series, this time in Memphis with the Iowa Cubs. Do you believe the end of August timetable remains possible, and will Zobrist help at this rate?
Boy, I mean, I don't know. Look, are you in? Are you out? Right?
Everybody in.
What's going on here? I don't know. He's got things he's got to deal with. Yeah, it's great to have, you know, a weekend job, and I mean, this is. Did he get called up by the reserves? He's got to go away for the weekend, and then he gets to go home again. I mean, it's just the whole thing is so weird and so different that it's hard to kind of zero in or pinpoint. I guess the timetable remains the same. I guess it doesn't matter what he does or doesn't do. Will he help at this rate? I mean, anybody watching and happy yesterday? Yeah, he'll help. But how much will he help? I mean, maybe the odd weekend, right? You could give him the odd weekend series. That's about it. I find this one just perplexing.
Well, it's weird, but it's consistent, Mully. I think the whole approach to this has been unorthodox, and I think it's been a little bit unprecedented. You don't know how to respond because it's never happened before where they've given a guy, a professional athlete, this much space and this much latitude to do as he wishes and to kind of structure the comeback according to his own personal needs and family needs. And I think, you know, the Cubs, on one hand, you want to commend them for that. On the other hand, you do wonder what they're doing in terms of a baseball plan, because I don't know if this is the right way to get somebody fully ready for September 1st, even a guy who's 38 years old, former World Series MVP. Talking to some people yesterday, trying to figure out exactly what is going on, I think part of the reason he's in Memphis with the Iowa Cubs this weekend is because it's closer to Nashville.
Exactly.
So it has some personal advantages for his own situation. And I think you have to see where he is against AAA pitching. That'll be a good challenge. You expect that he will be, he'll look fine. He won't look overmatched. Ben Zobrist is a guy that if he comes back to the Cubs September 1st, you have to remember it will be 4 months between major league at bats. I don't care how old you are or accomplished. That's going to be difficult for to look polished and seasoned in time.
Might it be harder for a guy his age?
Definitely. It could be harder for a guy his age. Now, what do they want him to do? Do they want him to be Ian Happ and play second base and give you line up some oomph? Maybe. Might be asking a bit much. Maybe it's a pinch hitter. Maybe Tony Kemp is the guy that is replaced instead of looking at strike three last night, even though it was a bad call in the ninth inning. Maybe Ben Zobrist is up there making something happen. So I don't know. As long as you don't expect a lot, I don't think you'll be disappointed. But if you expect Ben Zobrist to be the guy that you thought you were getting at the beginning of this year, I think you're in for a disappointment.
Please, please, please promote this man so I don't have to hear about this story any longer. Of course he has a chance. They're going to reassess with 2 weeks left in the month, and now he makes a big jump up to the AAA level, so he certainly has a chance. If he has a strong four-game series, I think they might end up calling him up before the end of the month here. Would it help? I have no idea what Ben Zobrist is going to be. But if he is up, what I do know is you probably won't see Albert Almora in the starting lineup much anymore. He's only going to be a defensive replacement later on in games when you have a lead or even some sort of a close game here. So he'll get called up, I believe, and he'll be in the lineup. Would he help? Well, can't get any worse. Two runs on five hits. This has been going on for years now, and people continue to act surprised.
Yeah, I mean, he'll obviously help. I was watching the end of that game last night, and I see Tony Kemp pinch hitting for Albert Almora Jr., yeah. And I'm like, holy God. Like, which is the worst option here? I mean, when Tony Kemp is the guy you're bringing in the ninth to try to keep the game going, granted, he was called out on a horrible strike call, was nowhere near the plate. Well, it was near the plate, it was way above the plate. But if you're replacing even a 38-year-old Ben Zobrist who has been out most of the year, if you're replacing him with Tony Kemp, I think that is a net positive. Because Tony Kemp, God bless him, you know, versatile player, speedster, got a few home runs this year. He's not your guy you want in there in the ninth to try to extend the game and give you a good at-bat. I think Ben Zobrist, even with all of the other prerequisites that we have to go over, is a better option. Even if he's not starting every day, Joe, you know, to have a guy like that who can work a good at-bat, is good against both lefties and righties, at least he was when he was playing, I think it's a much better option. And depth-wise, it's going to help this roster, even if he doesn't make it back for a while. And now, after last night's game, the Cubs, their struggles against lefties have been well documented. They're 11-15 against left-handed pitchers this season, starting pitchers, I should say. And last time I checked, there's a lot of good lefties around the National League that they will face in the postseason if they make it there. Ben Zobrist can only help out in that regard.
Despite the seemingly part-time status of this rehab, I do think it's still possible. It's mid-August. It is a possibility. Yes, the Cubs can use as much help as they can get, especially the road Cubs. The Wrigley Cubs seem to be okay on the offensive side, but they need some help. Kevin brought up
I love that. Now we're identifying them as the road Cubs or the Wrigley Cubs. That's
because
awesome.
We have to.
It's the yeah. tale.
It's not the same team.
It's
no,
the
it's
tale
not.
Of
it's
two
awesome.
Teams, and it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating to watch this team on the road. But yes, the Cubs can use any help they can get. David, I agree with the thinking you have. Keep the bar low for expectations with Ben Zobrist.
I tell that to people about myself.
Keep the bar low.
I won't
you
disappoint
won't be
you
disappointed.
If you keep the bar low.
Exactly. That's what you got to use for Ben Zobrist.
It's a tough one, Bruce. It's a very fair question and obviously a ripe one.
Did Dylan Cease do his part against Houston, and do you think he's getting stronger, weaker, or staying the same?
Well, I think he's getting a little bit, I hesitate to say stronger. I think he's kind of staying the same. You're seeing a guy that flashes brilliance at times. You're seeing a young pitcher struggling for command at others. And I think yesterday he got his first quality start, which was interesting because the statistics say that was his first quality start. In six innings, he gave up two earned runs. He walked four, one intentionally to make it five walks, only struck out two. And I don't think that the overwhelmingly dominant stuff you saw on his fastball, the way that you saw maybe in previous starts. He gave up a home run to Altuve. He gave up one to George Springer that's still going. And that's understandable. He's a young pitcher that's facing the best team in baseball. So there was a lot to like. I don't want to get discouraged about Dylan Cease because you've got to cling to something if you're a White Sox fan, and I think he gives you something that is an overall positive despite his record this season. So you have to continue to look at the bright side when it comes to a young pitcher like this. So I think you have to consider who he was facing, where he is in his development, and where he is in this season.
Who was his catcher?
And who was his catcher?
My God.
So, you know what? Wellington Castillo with three pass balls make you think
that
Emmanuel Hall should not have been the only receiver cut yesterday in Chicago.
You need a backstop. Nice. You just need one of those bouncy things.
Come on, man. Give your rookie some help.
That was crazy. I felt very encouraged by Dylan Cease. It doesn't bother me, as you say. You know, guys hitting home runs, look, you would prefer that didn't happen, but I thought he did a pretty good job. And I think that we're seeing him get better. And I think this is what progress is with young players. And I think he's a young pitcher, and it's going to take him a year or two.
Steady incremental progress.
To get that steady incremental progress. I liked what I saw from Dylan Cease. I think that that he's a good kid, and I'm on board with him in the future. So what is it now? James McCann has to catch every game? Is that where we're at?
Apparently.
It doesn't matter what's happening with Zach batting
Collins
average.
Would Zach Collins have done any worse Zach than Collins. Wellington Castillo yesterday?
Thank you, Kevin. That's who should be there.
I mean, Sebi Zavala, Zach Collins, somebody off the street, Ray. Yeah. I mean, anybody could be better than Wellington Castillo. I mean,
I'm ready. Put me in.
Since the PED thing last year to this garbage, I mean, so what a true. Horrible signing.
Yeah, really just ridiculous. But I'm on board with Dylan Cease.
Houston has the highest on-base percentage, highest OPS in all of baseball. And after that first pitch fastball to Springer, is that a moonshot?
Ball has still not landed, by the way.
You're kind of thinking, oh, boy, it's going to be one of these.
He's okay, though. He might have a future.
Springer? Yeah. He's all right. But six innings, two earned run against the Astros. I told you that before the game. You say, sign me up. I will take that. This is a lot of that. Uriel hitting six. Now, he had five walks on the evening, the most this season of his seven starts. But just how he bounced back after making those two mistakes, I think that's a positive. So I'll look at him as getting stronger after yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it, Joe. If before the game you said he would go six innings and allow just two earned runs, I think you would absolutely take that against Houston or anybody. I think if you're watching Dylan Cease every time he goes out there, you are seeing tiny bits of steady incremental progress, and he and Mitch Trubisky are not in that different of boats. It's just a good thing that the White Sox don't have to rely on Dylan Cease or put all their faith into him and all the eggs into the basket like the Bears have to with Trubisky. But Cease is definitely getting stronger. I would love to see the walks get cut down. I think that's a given. Five walks is pretty unacceptable over six innings pitched, but the stuff is there. He's got to work on location. He's got to work on, you know, being more efficient, going a little bit deeper into these games, not letting the pitch count get a hold of him. But I have been encouraged from what I've seen from Dylan Cease, mostly, even if the numbers aren't quite there yet, you can definitely see the makings of what should be a top of the rotation starter.
Did Dylan Cease do his part against Houston? I'll give that a hell yes. He did. I mean, the kid's looking great. I will say.
Say it with meaning, Ray.
He's looking great, and I'm putting him on the Mitchell Trubisky plan, too. I do. Every time he goes out, he's been getting better. He went through this tough Astros lineup three times. I mean, this is good. This is good. Every time he goes out there, you're seeing a little bit of improvement. That's what you want to see. The five walks, one of them was intentional. That's not great. Only two strikeouts. But he didn't have wildly bad command issues. The command is getting better each time he's out there. This is exactly what you want to see from one of the most important young players in your starting rotation and for the future of this team.
You know, as smart as you guys are, that might be the best question you've ever asked. I'm serious. I had never really contemplated this question.
Is Jose Quintana the Cubs' stopper, and is he the most underrated, undervalued, least appreciated baseball player in Chicago?
I like that term for him. I like stopper. It's a good one.
Is that a good term?
It's not ironic nor sarcastic.
No,
I think he's been really good, and I honestly believe that had he not been traded for Cease and Aloy, that we'd think about him a lot differently. I think that there's been so much regret on the behalf of Cub fans over that trade that he has not gotten proper respect for the job that he does, for the number of innings he pitches, for the number of games he's available and takes the ball. I get it. That wasn't what people thought they were getting. They thought they were getting a guy that was going to put him in the World Series. But what you got for that trade is a consistent player, a wildly consistent player, who pitched his arse off yesterday, had a career high in strikeouts, and I got a ton of respect for him, because if you really break down everything that he's done in the course of his career, the same problem was there definitely on the south side that you saw last night, which is run support.
Absolutely.
And it drives you absolutely crazy, because this guy is again, he's wildly consistent. It's just something that is so admirable. You would love to have a guy like that, not just on your team, in your life, for the love of God, right? Somebody that, you know, he's kind of a North Star.
Dependability.
He's really a dependable player and a steady player. And I get it that, you know, there were two young stars given up in that trade. And I think that that is what has ruined the appreciation level. And it's a pity, because he's been a really good stalwart for that team.
That's a really honest way to look at it. It's a good way to look at it, too, because you're right. And I found myself, I like this question, because it forces, I fell into the same trap yesterday. You know, you mentioned the word stopper, and here we are, you know, 6 in the morning, and I was like, yeah, right, stopper, okay.
You asked me if I was being sarcastic.
I know, are you being sarcastic? And then, you know, I started thinking about it, and we kidded before the show. I get on television last night at Sports Talk Live, and I used the term stopper to describe Jose Quintana. Because you look at the numbers, and you, if you are fair, and you take a step back and detach, and you say, you know what? Since going 9 straight starts without a victory, he's now gone 8 without a loss, and he's 6-0 with a 3.40 ERA in that span, 50 strikeouts, 7 walks, and 47 and two-thirds innings, and in 3 August starts, 1.89 ERA. This is a guy you can depend on, and that's all you can ask, and I do wonder where he falls in your rotation if this continues over the next month, over the next 6 to 8 weeks. And then if you are in a playoff situation, then the Cubs have a very nice problem to consider. So right now,
he's not their best pitcher. That's not what the question is. But he is absolutely reliable.
What does a stopper do? A stopper stops the bad things from happening. And Jose Quintana has been consistent enough to depend on him to do that every fifth day.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it is time to put some respect on Quintana's name. I mean, and for some reason, even during this strong run that he's had, and I guess it's because the offense has shown up most of the time, surprisingly, the Oakland game, they scored 10 runs. So what are you talking about? They're talking about the offense. Nobody's talking about Quintana. That Pittsburgh game, they won 11-3. They scored 11 runs. Everybody's talking about the offense. Nobody discussing what Quintana's done. And for those that believe the Cubs are definitely in the playoffs, they have an 82% shot right now. I keep hearing cue to the bullpen. He's the fifth starter. Are you sure?
No.
The way he's going right now, the numbers don't look great. His ERA is still above 4. It's 4.11, which is a bit surprising because he ends up having a bit of a clunker about once a month. But I don't know that you want this guy coming out of the bullpen right now. I'm not going to go as far as saying that he's your stopper, but he is absolutely underrated, undervalued, least appreciated player in baseball. In Chicago, I can't come up with anybody else.
He's been underappreciated and underrated since, 2012, 2013, when he first came onto the scene with the White Sox. And then all he did was pitch well for the White Sox, and pretty much all he's done is pitch pretty consistently for the Cubs. It's just that some of these dinosaurs look at win-loss record and they determine that he might not, you know, be what they expected him to be because, he only won 9 games this year and he was 9-10 or whatever. That doesn't matter. You know, it goes so much more beyond that. And I don't think he's the best pitcher on this staff, but after last night's game, he actually does lead the team in wins above replacement now for the Cubs starting pitching staff, and that's partially due to the fact that he leads the team in innings pitched, which I was very surprised about. 14 strikeouts is always going to bump up your WAR, but definitely the most underappreciated player in Chicago, just like he has been pretty much since he debuted with the Sox all those years ago.
Over the course of the past couple of weeks, the Cubs starting rotation has been decent, had a good decent run, but Quintana hasn't lost a start since the 10-2 loss to the Mets, where he had 8 earned runs in 4 1/3 innings, June 22nd. Since then, Quintana's been 6-0, a 3.40 ERA in his last 8 starts. In August, through the three of his 3 starts, a 1.89 ERA, 26 strikeouts, no walks. Thanks to Mark Gonzalez for those numbers in the Tribune. Yes, he is the stopper right now. I think right now in this current stretch, yeah, he's even the best pitcher in this rotation. And yes, undervalued, least appreciated. Jose Quintana, I apologize for not appreciating you enough on my part.
By the way, this is crazy to even fathom here, but, you know, and it ebbs and it flows. But of all the Cubs starters, wouldn't John Lester be the guy you trust the least right now?
Is he the weakest link?
In a big start? Is he the weakest link in this rotation, like he said himself?
Let's see what Cole Hamels does tonight. The problem
He's
with
the
those
stopper.
Guys, what the problem with those guys is age. That's
I hate to say this because it's going to sound stupid, and I know you guys will laugh, but I mean, I'm acknowledging that I'm going to say something that might sound stupid. I still have most doubts probably about Darvish.
I don't think that's stupid at all. I mean,
I don't know what to expect
from him on a start-to-start basis.
I think you could apply that to Q. You could apply those doubts to him just because John Lester has done it in the biggest moments.
Yeah.
And that weighs heavily in how you evaluate these guys. The experience of being at your best when it matters most. And we haven't seen that from
predictable
Darvish
behavior.
In Chicago, and we haven't seen that from
it's just the dependability factor that I just feel better about Quintana and other guys in that rotation than I do about Darvish, no matter how good he's been.
In that big moment, do you want a volatile pitcher out there?
Right.
I mean, that's what Darvish is. At his best and his worst.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Kimbrel.
I don't want to see him.
All right.
Is he the stopper? He's a heart stopper whenever
he
comes into the game.
He's coming back.
Did they want him back?
You know, he's coming back next week. Wrap your mind around it.
You do.
Yeah.
Do you, though?
You want him back better than he was. How's that?
Okay.
That's tomorrow's 5 of 5.
Okay. That's for tomorrow. 312-644-6767. That's the 5 at 5 at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.